From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here we are. It's Thursday evening, and that can mean only one thing. Leon's not here again.
Woohoo!
In case you don't know who we are, we, as in you, Garth,
yes,
and me, Mark,
mm-hmm,
are two-thirds of Australia's most... What's the superlative I'm looking for?
Famous? Outstanding? Face for radio?
Regular, let's say regular.
Yeah, your brand this morning, I like it.
Board game podcasters and broadcasting right here in the Edge Radio Studios in Hobart, 99.3 FM. We come to you every Thursday like clockwork, except... Of course, last Thursday, we had a bit of a day off. First one in a long, long time.
Well, you two had a day off, let's be honest.
Well, Garth, you've been travelling.
Yeah, look, part of being in the travel industry is that you have to take advantage of the travel when the travel in this industry asks you to travel, and that's what I had to do.
Of course.
So, although it sounds all lovely, I spend a lot of the time going to places that I'm told to go to and not that I have any choice to go to.
That's right.
Which, again, world's smallest violin, very much a first world problem.
Yeah.
So, look, yeah, this time last week I was on a plane to Melbourne, which is not the most exciting place in the world, albeit one of the best cities in the world.
It is good.
To then have a five-hour connection to head to Malaysia and ultimately spend a few nights on the island of Langkawi.
Oh, how lovely.
Look, it was lovely. It was really lovely, 35 degrees, beautiful golden sandy beaches, fantastic hospitality, lovely resort, and catching up with lots of friends because there was a better part of 100 of us there. And you know what made it really amazing?
What?
I got there Friday, 10 a.m., got on the coach.
Nice.
45 minutes to the resort.
Yep.
Look at the resort. Open up the curtains in my room. And there's the ocean, you know, golden sandy beach. Perfect blue ocean.
Yes.
And you know what I wanted to do?
Go swimming, perhaps?
Yeah, go and have a swim. I've just been traveling for however long. Yep. Let's go and get my togs and just go in there and maybe have the first beer. But I couldn't do that, Mark.
What? How come?
Because I was wearing shoes, socks and pants and shirts and all that kind of hoo-ha because you have to look somewhat respectable on these flights
because
airlines have been very generous to us. Well, the problem is, although I arrived, my bag didn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And look, I've been travelling, you know, I've been in this job now for 15 plus years. Mm-hmm. I've done, again, very luckily, multiple trips every year for work, travelling since I was day dot. It was the first time in my life that my suitcase didn't arrive. So, again, the averages are really, really good.
Yeah.
But it's really, really bad when you're in 35-degree heat and you are in shoes and socks and long pants and office attire. And every one of the 90-odd people who were accompanying me who had their bags were in the pool with the beers and the gin and tonics and enjoying themselves. So you know what I did?
What did you do, Garth?
I took advantage of the fact that the person I was sharing a room with had gone to play Ernie Els Championship Golf Course. It was just around the corner. And I spent 3 hours sitting in my underpants in the air conditioning going, I hope my suitcase arrives. And it really didn't until the next day at 3 p.m.
Oh, no.
And you've not seen a happier Dice Man than when he saw his suitcase. It was not a pleasant 24 hours.
Oh, dear.
So, look, Langkawi is beautiful.
Yep.
Personally, I think there's better places to go, but if you want a Langkawi experience, Langkawi offers that exact
experience. Well, I can think of two fantastic places to go.
Mm.
The first one I'm going to mention, you've mentioned already, is Melbourne.
Yes.
Because I went to Melbourne yesterday, so it's Thursday here in Hobart and on the podcast. Hey, it's Thursday. I went to Melbourne yesterday, Wednesday afternoon, to see one of my favourite bands of all time. And if you've listened live, or if you've listened to the podcast, you'll catch very small snippets of them every now and again. Death Cab for Cutie playing their first Australian gig for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sold out. Sarah and I went there for our joint birthdays. It was a birthday present to ourselves to fly to Melbourne.
Awesome.
Go to Death Cab, stay the night, and fly back this morning on the 6 a.m. flight, which meant we had to wake up at 4 a.m., get the Skybus. So needless to say, in case people don't know and they're not listening live, it's just after 7 p.m. here in Hobart on Thursday night. So it's been a long day for me. I'm a little bit weary.
Well, you had a full day at work as well, so straight off the plane.
Yeah, straight to work. That's right. Fun and games. But look, Melbourne is a lovely place to go. I had a great time. Death Cab were amazing. But the second place that immediately springs to mind when I think going somewhere to have a fun time is that place on the border.
Oh, yeah.
Where they have a convention. Albury.
Ah, Albury, yes. The Queen's birthday long weekend. We are, of course, talking about BorderCon. And to mix things up a little bit, how about we start the episode by talking about our BorderCon competition, where you can get the only two available tickets to this remarkable 4 days of gaming.
Sold-out convention where people were turned away at the digital door.
Correct.
Within, I think less than 30 minutes of the tickets going on sale.
Oh, so look, it's ridiculous.
There are definitely people out there who didn't get tickets to this venue who want to go.
So this convention on the border called BorderCon is from Friday the 7th through to Monday the 10th, and Monday is the Queen's birthday public holiday. These two tickets will enable you to turn up as early as the doors are open on Friday and stay there virtually all the time until the doors close on Monday. We do recommend keeping hydrated. We do recommend getting an adequate amount of sleep.
And probably also getting some accommodation.
And also good. Very much accommodation, because Albury at that weekend is very, very full to the brim. So the way that you will win these tickets is join the maddening crowds who have sent us those entries, which are quite simply answering the question, what game do you want to play at BorderCon with the Dice Men Cometh? And then you just send that in and join the list of people, and then one lucky person will win a couple of tickets, and then they'll get to live out that dream.
That's right. And you can just write down what you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You can do an audio clip when Raven played here on the radio. You can do a video clip, which was the winning, not that this is any indication, but the winning entry last year was a video clip.
Correct.
Where the person's basically explained the game they wanted to play and why. You could post it on YouTube. You could post it on our Facebook page. You can send it to dicemencometh@gmail.com.
That's right.
You can Instagram us. We're @dicemencometh. You can send us a tweet @dicemencometh. We're very consistent.
I know. It's wonderful.
But two tickets to the sold out, I mean, in my mind, it is the most fun 4 days in board gaming in Australian board gaming annual history calendar.
I think you're still
every year.
I think you're still jet lagged, Mark.
Really?
Yeah, you sound jet lagged. But yes, that is right. So look, the competition is only going on till the end of March. Now, that is about 3 weeks from now. So we do encourage anyone to get off the fence if you're sitting on it and just send in the entry, because that's the best thing that you could possibly do to throw that hat in the ring and hopefully have your chance at winning those couple of tickets.
And look, there will be definitely accommodation options there. The great thing is, you know, there's 250-odd people travelling to BorderCon from various parts of Australia, so you might be able to get a lift with someone, you might be able to share accommodation with someone. There are options definitely there, but the key fact is you will get the only two tickets left in the universe.
Correct.
To this particular convention. And if you have been listening to the show for more than a little while, you will know we probably spend a very large part of the year reflecting on how much fun we have at BorderCon and all the fun games we play, all the lovely people we meet, how well organised it is. If you want to be there with us, drinking your adult beverages, playing games, you know how to get the entries in.
Correct.
Now, you go, Garth.
Oh, I'm really just saying that it's such a good weekend.
It is.
The advertisers, the organisers put on such a wonderful event. And obviously, to get to play with Dice Men, it doesn't really get much better than that.
Not many people get
that chance. There is a very large chance that whatever you choose to play, you'll beat us at. Because we are not that talented in the game space. So, yes, Tweet us, Instagram us, all of which is at DiceMenCometh. As Mark said, email us at DiceMenCometh@gmail.com. Jump on our Facebook page and stick it on the page or send us a private message. There are numerous ways for you to be able to enter.
But don't waste time.
Don't dilly-dally.
Because the more we get to see your entry in front of our eyes, clearly, probably the better chance you have.
Correct. We don't want to have any AP in this particular competition.
No, that's right.
We just want all the entries.
All right, let's go and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the few games we've been playing lately.
I'm Matthew Lee from The Campaigner, and I listen to the world's best podcast. And I also listen to The Dice Man Cometh.
Are you with Edge Radio 99.3 FM here with the Iceman Cometh? That was Hatchy with a lovely track called Sleep. And believe it or not, Garth, she is a young woman, she was the support act to Death Cab for Cutie last night at Hamer Hall in Melbourne. And in fact, tonight, if you're listening live, it probably means you're not about to go to the Death Cab for Cutie concert in Melbourne because firstly, it's sold out. And secondly, hey, you're here listening to The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio rather than being in Melbourne listening to a gig. I think the genre is called dream pop, something dream pop. Like that. But hey, she did a lovely job.
Okay. Well, you were there. I wasn't.
But
that,
anyway.
That song seemed completely solid.
Now, tonight we've got a bit of a treat where we're not delving back into the vault, but we're delving into two games that we played recently that we haven't played for quite some time. And in fact, I didn't manage to find the actual episodes where we played these two games and discussed them. But in this case, the game you're talking about, it may have even been before you started on this show, Garth,
or just after. I reckon it could have been just after because I don't think you guys have a copy and I do.
That could be a good reason.
So there's a fair chance of this.
I have a suspicion it's around about episode 75, 77, something in that thing, which means it's been a good at least 4 years, I think, since we chatted about this particular game, which is...
Which is City of Horror. Now, it might have only been a month since the dead have started coming back, but it feels like it's been a century. At first, it didn't affect us much. We managed to control the epidemic. An antidote was even found, but there's never enough of it to go around. And there are always more deaths. Our city has been bled dry. Looters have gone through. We've gathered all that could be used as a weapon. We've placed the town elder on the water tower with binoculars. And we've waited, ready to fight. But we could have never imagined this. One night, at midnight, we saw the first zombies arrive. There were so many that we couldn't even count them all. The marshal saw the vast numbers of zombies approaching. He immediately called for help, but it would take 4 hours for help to arrive. We'll have to hang tight. In the ensuing panic, the ambulance and the supply truck hit each other. We fought for the last few weapons remaining in town. We should have shared the antidotes instead. Now we're all barricaded in and we're afraid. When I look at my companions, the side glances we give each other, the way we hold our weapons, I wonder if the danger isn't greater inside. So as you may have guessed, City of Horror is a backstabbing survival horror game where you are all playing, and when I say all, I mean 3 to 6 players, all competing to survive those 4 hours before the helicopter help arrives. You're not just fighting the zombies, you are fighting each other, because this game is a classic example of how to ruin friends and not influence people, or try and influence people and try and make temporary friends, because you'll need them, but not so much as you'll throw them in front of anyone to make sure that they get eaten before you do, because this game can be mean. But first caveat, play it with 5 or 6. Just fill up this board game with as many willing souls as you can, because it will just make that experience even more fun.
And I was going to say, it's definitely, you know, in case you're wondering by the title, City of Horror, doesn't immediately give it away, but it's very much set in the sort of George Romero Day of Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead style zombie movie. So not so much your Walking Dead, more that thing where the zombies, yes, you have to worry about the people, but the zombies, you have to worry about them as well. They're pretty serious.
Damn right you do. And there are a truckload of zombies. Now, this is all standees. There are somewhere in the vicinity of like 50, 60 zombie standees.
Yeah,
there is
a lot.
A lot of them. And look, at times, most of them, if not all of them, will come out on the board. And let's just get to this. So this is designed by Nicholas Normandin. Now, he hasn't done a huge amount. He has done Mall of Horror, which, Mark, I'm sure you will mention during this conversation.
Yes, I'll come back to that later because I have a copy of that.
Which was released in 2005. He then released City of Horror in 2012. And he's got Bahamas, which is being released by Matago in 2019. Ooh. So he certainly hasn't done a huge number of games.
Are there zombies in the Bahamas?
I'm sure they will be, given his past record. Now, the other thing is the art is by Miguel Coimbra.
Ooh,
who's just done
name.
A couple of games like Seven Wonders, Cyclades, Small World, Imhotep, Hyperborea.
Very famous name in our hobby.
So in terms of how this game looks, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Now, getting to the board, it is a modular board where there are going to be six locations. You've got the water tower, you've got the church, the armory, the bank, and the hospital. They all look really nice. You've got the crossroads, which is not surprisingly right in the middle, and that is where a whole bunch of bad stuff's going to happen, but it's also used as a storage point for some food and for some antidotes. And then you've got the water tower, as I mentioned in the intro, and the water tower is in the third dimension.
Oh, yes.
Because you have to build this little water tower and put it up there, Bill, for all to see, and it is a spot that your survivors can actually go to, unless it gets exploded.
Well, the great thing is, as you imagine it, you know, a great spot to be would be on top of a water tower, looking down and seeing what's happening over the town. Surely there would be some advantages to that, but there may be some disadvantages.
Yeah, there are. And look, one of the things this game has that we love is also double-sided board technology. So there isn't six locations, there's actually 12. And whatever the combination there is where you've got some on one side and some on the other, I don't even think numbers go that high, but it is pretty amazing. So what you're going to do is you're going to hopefully get five or six willing participants in this. They'll each get a stack of movement cards, which are quite simply one card for each location per player. So you get a deck of six cards each. And each of those cards, one will be the church, one will be the hospital, one will be the water tower, one will be the crossroads, blah, 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 blah. You'll also get a little player aid. And then depending on the number of players, you will get dealt that number of survivor cards, just dealt at random, and they're going to be the people that you need to try and keep alive. You'll then put your standees in your individually coloured stands, and that's where the game is going to start. You'll then go in a reverse player order, seeding the board with your various survivors. And they will all end up in different particular locations because that'll become apparently important after one of the phases of the first round of the game. But the board will start with a whole bunch of survivors out there. And look, not too many zombies, which is fine. But that will change quite quickly, and you'll see why.
And the great thing about this game is, so it plays 3 to 6.
Yes.
But pretty much, you've got the same, because you've got the same number of people on the board. Obviously, if you're playing with 3 or 4, you'll have more individuals that you control than if you have 5 or 6.
Correct.
But this is definitely a game where, you know, a lot of times it's like, oh, these games play, you know, perfectly at 4. They're okay at 5. You'd never want to play it at 6. This is not the case. This is a game where the more the merrier, because the more chaos that is happening, the more people that are trying to strike a deal, the more chaos ensues.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other great thing that happens with more players is that you get less action cards to start with. And at 6 players, you'll get 4 cards. At 5, you'll get 5. 4, you'll get 6. So play it at maximum numbers, because action cards are a critical, crucial resource here. And to have them taken away from you when you've got more players ramps up the tension and the importance that goes to those action cards. So anyway, there's your setup. You'll start with survivors in various places. You'll start with a little handful of action cards. You'll start with your location cards, and then we're ready to go. Now, this game plays out over 4 rounds. Mm-hmm. Each round signifies 1 hour of game time. Now, you've got a series of decks that you will randomly create your 4 hours worth. So you've got a whole bunch of 0 hour decks and then 1 hour decks and 2 hour and 3 hour and 4 hour. So you're going to make a stack of four cards, just one of each of the random ones from each hour block. You're going to start by turning over the zero card, and on the flip side of that card is basically the modular board and where an initial lot of zombies are going to be placed.
So it's your setup instructions.
Correct. So there'll be zombies placed at various locations. Each location can only ever have a maximum of 8 zombies. If a location has 8 zombies, get out of that location. Just get out of there. Should you be able to. But then there might also be some good stuff that is randomly dropped, and there's loot, which is antidotes, which are critically important because at the end of the game, the winner will be whoever has the most victory points. Victory points are sourced by having survivors, but survivors are only worth victory points if they've got the antidote, otherwise they all die. So you need antidotes. And then you might also have some looted action cards sort of dotted around the board. And how you get them? Well, we'll get to that later. Yep. So there's your setup. You've seeded the players. You've seeded the board with zombies. You've got maybe some good stuff, but chances are it's bad. And then you've got these now four cards, which you've used over the first one. You've got 3 hours left to go, and here we go. The first thing that you're going to do is if anyone is lucky enough to be on the water tower, and if the water tower is on the requisite side, the player's going to be able to pick up the next time and have a look at it and get a bit of inside knowledge about what's going to happen when those zombies actually approach.
So you're sort of seeing them on their way coming.
Yeah, you've got your set of binoculars and you go, oh, I can see that some zombies are going to go to the church and they're going to go to the armory, and, oh, I've got really good binoculars because I know that there's going to be some antidote in the hospital or whatever the case may be. Now, this is not a cooperative game. So you're under absolutely no obligation to talk about what you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the water tower has up to 2 spots. So there could be 2 characters in this particular location. They could be owned by the same person eventually, or they could be 2 different players. And those 2 players both get to see the information, and it's up to you what you decide to do with it. I might be on the water tower and I go, hey, Mark, I am telling you, you do not want to go anywhere near the church because a horde of zombies is going to be there.
Do I believe you, Garth? That's the problem, isn't it?
Well,
that's the problem.
I am a very trustworthy person.
Yes, sometimes.
So once that's happened and whoever's on the water tower has had their chance to do their thing, and look, if the water tower is on the other side, they don't get to do that particular thing.
Yeah.
You then go to simultaneous movement selection, where each player is going to look at their hand of movement cards, and you've always got access to all of them available, and everyone is going to secretly choose one and put it face down. Now, you are going to choose one of the 6 locations, the water tower, the crossroads, the church, the armory, the bank, or the hospital, to move one and only one of your characters.
Mm.
Now, the rule states you have to be able to move them. So if you've got the ninja in the church and you play the church card, you can't say, oh, I'm going to move the ninja because he's already in the church. You have to make an effort to be able to move.
So, and you're not saying where you're moving from, you're saying where you're moving to. So one of your characters must be able to move to that location. That's an important
exactly
distinction.
Right. Yeah. So that's all played face down. Only then, once everyone's done, you'll actually go to the next phase, which is flipping over the next hour timer and the zombies
so
come out.
Bad.
And this is where you haven't even revealed where you're going, but you've made your decision. So no one knows what you've decided, but everyone's sitting there going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, because you've chosen to go to this one spot because there's no zombies or there's some loot or whatever the case may be. And then you flip over the timer and maybe the person on the water tower wasn't truthful. And told you, no, you shouldn't have really gone there, but you should have gone to the church or something because it's actually really good.
And here, look, you know, there are so many ticks for this game. Let's get it out there. But one of the very first ticks is this interesting decision of, firstly, where am I going to go? Then while I'm starting to think about, well, who's the one of my 2 or 3 or 4 characters that's going to move there, before I can make, I might have decided, well, really what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the schoolgirl and I'm going to take her to the hospital because she's got the best chance of survival for it, whatever reason, but I really don't want these other 2 to move. They're in a good spot.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden the zombies come out and it's like, Oh my God, five zombies at the hospital.
Yeah, I've chosen to go there. But I'm locked in now.
Or, you know, no zombies go to the church, and the schoolgirl was going to leave the church because she thought it was going to get busy, but there's no zombies there. So, well, maybe I'll leave her at the church, and maybe I'll move the grandmother from one of the other locations whose name I can't remember. This is such an interesting decision that you sort of have to decide, but then you don't. You get to change your mind. It ties you up in knots.
Correct. And look, I did neglect that everyone reveals their movement. So everyone knows where people are planning to go, but you don't actually do the movement before the zombies. So everyone's got this face-up card that shows you what your decision is, and then you see all the board stakes just completely change. So the zombies will go in there, they'll do their invasion is what it's called, and you just place it, basically are seeding more zombies out there, always respecting the limit of no more than eight. You'll be putting out some antidotes and some action cards if they happen to be turned up. And look, the invasion cards also will move zombies. So at the top of the card, it might say, move all zombies from area 2 to area 4. So any of the zombies on that spot, you have to move along. And then you put more zombies out, and there's a mechanic called the zombie leader that affects the crossroads, and he might move, so that's a bit nasty as well. So anyway, once you've done invasion, then you've got the joy of deciding what to do with that movement decision that you've made, because your plans have just gone up in smoke, but the game doesn't care. So from first player through to last player, everyone takes their turn. Now, each of these spots only has a certain number of spaces available for the characters.
And they're all different.
There are. So it's 2 through to 4. As I said, the water tower has 2 spots because it's an incredibly powerful position to be in, because the other side of the water tower is that you get to play your movement card after every other player has revealed their action card. So you don't know what's coming. You still don't know where to go because the zombies are going to appear, but you do get to decide, oh, well, if Mark's chosen to go to the hospital and Leon's chosen to go to the armory and Garth's also chosen to go to the armory, well, I can play a card because I know there's definitely going to be a spot available for me in the bank.
Yeah.
Because I can see there's a spare spot there and no one else is going there. So it's a really powerful position to be in. So anyway, you'll do all of those things, and then you get to the resolution of those locations. Now, if you happen to try and get into a location and it's full, you're just going to have to go straight to the crossroads. And trust me when I say you never want to be on the crossroads.
That's right.
There's no safety in the crossroads. You're on the street. And zombies sort of patrol the street. And I can tell you that zombies are going to eat someone at the crossroads. Yeah. And if there's no one else there, they're going to eat you. And that's a bad thing. So, you've moved. You then go to the resolution, and the resolution happens in area 1 through to 6. Area 1 being the water tower, and then it goes round and round and round the board state, the final one being the crossroads. Mm-hmm. So it's quite simple, and it's really clearly laid out on the board what's going to happen, because it'll say if there are a certain number of zombies, or if there is an equal or greater number of zombies to the number of players there, bad stuff's going to happen, and bad stuff means the zombies attack.
And that's that dilemma of, it might be really great to go to the armory because, hey, I might find a gun or something, but if I'm the only one there and then 2 zombies appear there, I'm not strong enough to hold them out. But then if too many people go there and if too many zombies are there, they're going to get in anyway. It's just the permutations and combinations of how many people and how many zombies and... Oh, I can take a chance, but then if everyone goes there, it just has you caught up in your head as you make these decisions every time.
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
It is. So the resolution has a 3-step process. The first thing is every location has a special ability that you can do. So, for example, the church is if you discard one of your precious, precious action cards, you get to flip one of your character cards from its exhausted side to its rested side. Now, what does that mean? Well, each character card is double-sided, and each character has a once-per-game special ability that allows them to do something. It might allow them to move to a location that is otherwise full, or kill some zombies, or do some stuff. But once you use it, you have to flip it over.
Yeah.
There's even the pregnant lady, and the pregnant lady can also flip over, but that's signifying that she's had her baby, so there's a whole different standee, which is now a mother carrying a child.
Yes.
And for the rest of the game, she gets 2 votes instead of 1, which is incredibly powerful, and you'll understand why in a little while. But the point is, each of these locations has a different benefit. So you might spend an action card to rest your character. You might discard an action card to draw a food token. And food tokens are just free VPs, yeah, from one through to three VPs. You might go to the hospital and discard an action card to take an antidote. Yeah. And you need those antidotes because otherwise your characters are basically walking dead people. Or you might want to go to the armory and, again, discard an action card from your hand to take another action card from the deck because the one you got in your hand might be garbage.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And there's so many. There's such a huge variety of action cards.
But the problem is, in a four-player game, you've only got four of those cards, yeah, to start with, and they do only come out very rarely. So please, activate the location with care. Once you've done that, we're then going to see, is there going to be a zombie attack? And this is where players have to try and figure out what to do with this horde of zombies at their front door.
Mm.
So say, for example, the condition is there has to be the same or more zombies at a location than there are players, and you've got five zombies and three players at a particular location.
Uh-oh.
It is up to the three players in that location to do what they can. Because they're the ones who are going to suffer the consequences, and the consequence will be, if the zombies attack, one of them will die.
And when you say do what they can, Garth, there are a number of things they can do, isn't there?
Yeah, they can. So they might want to kill zombies, which is great, because the less zombies, the better. Do you know how you kill zombies, Mark?
Stab them in the head, don't you? That's the usual way.
Well, if you've got the right card, which is an action card.
Yes.
Because action cards are going to be the only real way that you can kill zombies, and you don't get many of those, and you might at best be able to kill two zombies.
Or you might have a grenade which might kill a couple, or a shotgun or a pistol or something, which, might only let you kill one. And killing that one might be enough to get the zombie level down to where someone doesn't get eaten. But the question is, and you're going to come to it in a minute, do I want to be the one to spend that card because I may not be the one at risk of being eaten?
Correct. And this is where the game is at its core, all about negotiation and all about figuring out. Because even though it's for the three people in this particular location to sort it out, because otherwise they have the consequences, anyone at the table can offer to kill something. So I don't have to have a spot, a person in this particular location to be involved to go, you know what, I'm going to kill the zombies, okay? I'll take that responsibility from you and I'll just make everyone's life a little bit easier.
Mm.
But why would I do that?
That's right.
Why would I? But I can. The reason I would want to do that is because once that resolution has happened, you move on to the next phase. And look, if the zombie attack doesn't happen, then basically that phase
has
ended.
You're sitting pretty.
Well, if there's some good stuff there, you've got to vote for who is going to be the divider up of the goods. So who's going to take the antidote and the card that they're, for example. Now, it's only a vote between the people at the location.
Mm.
Everyone gets one vote, with the exception of if the pregnant lady has had a baby, she gets two.
Yeah.
Incredibly powerful.
And sometimes, if I remember rightly, there might be a card or two in the action cards that give you an extra vote or let you count out a vote. There's some funny little twists.
Yeah,
in
and there are characters who have the ability, well, that cannot vote unless you've exhausted them and turned their side, and I believe it's the grandfather. So anyway, you're going to do the old 1, 2, 3 and point to whoever you want to be in charge of dividing up whatever goods there are.
So lots of pointing at yourself.
Well, yes. And you get one vote, excluding any character abilities, one vote for each of the characters you're there. So if there are three spots and they're owned by three different players, that's one vote each. But if you're at a spot and there are two owned by one player and one owned by someone else, that's not a good position to be in. So you'll do that vote. It's important to note, if there is a draw, which can quite easily happen if you've got three separate players there, then the loot just stays there and nothing happens. No one wins. So you need to come up with an actual winner. And their job will then be, they only ever get to keep one bit of good loot. They have to give the other stuff away.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have to give it away to someone that's at the same location as them, which is why me, who's this fourth player out in the wilderness who's helped them kill some zombies, I might want to do that because I need an antidote. Otherwise, one of my characters won't get on the chopper. or I really want an action card because, look, I'm spending an action card to kill a zombie. Surely the best thing that you can do, guys, is give me one of those action cards at your back. Now, that's all good and well if the zombie threat has decreased enough at that spot, but if it doesn't, then you have a vote to see who gets eaten. And it's exactly the same rules where everyone gets a vote, you point to a finger, and that is they get eaten. Ties are broken by whoever is the first player. And that's a powerful position to be in as well, because especially early in the game, there's not going to be many locations where there is, you know, a powerful, strong player with a couple of characters.
Yes, and because that's the thing, you want to spread out because, well, if you lose someone, oh my goodness sake, you want to make sure you've got others safe. So whilst it might be great to have your characters together because that'll give you good voting power, what if that location gets overrun by zombies?
Oh, man.
And what if you're the only character there? You basically are going to be voting for one of your characters to be eaten by zombies.
Correct.
Because you can't avoid it.
Not at all. So you're just going to go around and do all of these six locations. The crossroads basically is really awful because if there's at least one zombie in the crossroads, someone's going to get eaten. And as I said, there's this little rondel, which is the zombie leader. And he's just basically going round and round and round in colour order, nom-nom-nomming the player of that particular colour. If there is no player of that particular colour, he just keeps going until he definitely has eaten somebody. Mm. It is a horrible position to be in. And look, the game will last for four rounds. Whoever is a survivor at the end has to assign an antidote to each of the characters that they've got still alive. You'll then add up the number of victory points for the survivors that you've got alive, any food tokens that you've got, any excess antidotes that you've got.
As if.
And then whoever has the most points is the winner. This game, look, on BGG, it says it's 90 minutes and it's bang on. I reckon even at the really high player count. I played this and Aiden and Beau had never played it before. And we played it in maybe just 10 minutes more than that, including teaching. So it was really, really good.
And that was with Trent as well.
I know. And he did his typical thing of making an alliance and then breaking up before the first turn even had done his thing. So, look, that's all I've got to say on it. It's more than enough. This game is so much fun. It is one of the best zombie games for me because it's not all about the zombies. It's about your fellow humans who are sometimes good and quite often really, really bad.
And look, I guess if we reflect on zombie games, of course our mostest favouritest zombie game is Dead of Winter.
Yes.
But this is very, very different because in Dead of Winter you're working together.
Ah, I mean, yes.
Or are you? Mm. You know, and you have the hidden traitor and everything. Whereas this, you are absolutely from the first second of the game, you are out for yourself. Just a couple of quick reflections for me. Oh, well, firstly, I love this game. I have Mall of Horrors.
Which I've not played.
Which is, set. I can't think which one it is. There's one of those George Romero films. I think it's Dawn of the Dead, where you're actually, it's set in a shopping mall.
Okay.
So it's basically a slightly more simplified version where you don't have all the different character cards. You have these little wooden tokens. And so everyone will have a guy with a baseball bat, a guy with a gun, a cheerleader. Depending on the player numbers, you might also have a little child. And so the guy with the baseball bat is quite strong. The guy with the gun gets an extra vote. The cheerleader, look, not wanting to be sexist, but when confronted by zombies, they scream a lot.
Mm.
So
they attract zombies,
each round, the location with the most cheerleaders will attract an extra zombie. But it's basically, so instead of being out in town, it's inside a mall. Your six locations are six different shops. You actually, instead of having the pre-programmed hour cards, you roll dice. And the dice, you have, I think it's four dice, obviously one to six. Whatever you roll, those are the four locations where the zombies go to. And again, each room in the mall has a different maximum amount of people that it can handle, a different maximum of the zombies will break down the door. So it doesn't have, it does have some of the action cards, but not quite the variety that it does in the City of Horrors. It obviously doesn't have the variety of characters. So it's a simpler version. Look, I'm torn because in my mind, I do like it because it's a bit more pure. You have the car park where instead of the crossroads, where in the car park, definitely someone's going to get eaten because there's just nowhere to hide.
Mm-hmm.
But in the car park, there are always these equipment cards, like the special cards, because you find them in the, in the back of utes and things like that. So the person who's in the car park is going to get, is going to divvy out these equipment cards every turn. So it's got a few little twists. As I said, to me, it's a little bit simpler, a little bit more pure. You have these lovely dials that you use to vote where you set the dial and you flip it over to see who you voted for. I don't know. I really like it. I haven't played it for a long time. And I've got to say, I think Mall of Horror was the first ever game I saw with the name Asmodee on it.
Okay.
I think Mall of Horrors came out, it was 2005?
It was.
And I think it might have, I don't know, I wouldn't say that it was Asmodee's very first game, but it was right up there where they were very, very much a French company coming into the sort of the mainstream board game market. And I think, you know, you've got the rule book where it's in French and English. I didn't know who Asmodee was when I bought this game. But look at them now. They own everything.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm torn. Part of me says, yeah, that pure, there's a bit more negotiation, a bit less luck, a bit less trickery of City of Horror in Mall of Horror. But either of them are a fantastic zombie game. Really give you a real sense of being in one of those George Romero zombie movies.
So, yeah, there you go. That was City of Horror. We better wrap this up and go to a song because, Mark, you want to talk about a game that you and your lovely partner have been playing a bit of. So you're with the Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM and we'll be back after this song.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. It's Mark here, and welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
Well, there you go. That was Filthy Little Star with Almost True. They are a Tassie act.
Woohoo!
Now, Mark,
Garth,
you have discovered the new hotness that was actually really good quite a few years ago. Is that right?
That's right. I have delved back into the past because of the electronic trickery that you put me onto.
It's all my fault.
The fact that the digital version, the app version of Suburbia was free for... Was it only 24 hours?
Yeah, I think 24 hours, yeah.
And
it's a blink and you miss kind of thing because it's normally 10, 11 bucks or something like that.
And so I downloaded that on my iPad, on my phone. I told my partner Sarah about it. She grabbed it and she started playing it lots. Now, I have always been a fan of Suburbia. Let's get that out there. And again, I think if you delve deeply back into the archives, you would find we would have spoken about this. It's definitely under 100, the number of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
We did do a bit of a comparison between this and the Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
After a BorderCon, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe just after BorderCon last year or the year before.
At least a couple of years back. Because we managed to break Castles of Mad King in our first round where there was nothing but cellars or whatever.
None of us knew how to be the master builder and make any money.
Anyway.
And then all the rooms came out and they were weird. Anyway, so downloaded the app, was playing Suburbia, and firstly, look, I'm not getting any younger, Garth.
Oh, really?
I do wear glasses for reading.
Yes.
And I was trying to play this on my phone. And I was struggling because, yeah, you can zoom in, but if you zoom in, you can't see all the other stuff that's happening. And so I pulled out my iPad, and I was playing it on the iPad, which is much better. My partner, Sarah, she was playing it on her phone. She's got a bigger, slightly bigger phone than me. She was doing fine because she's a bit younger. She doesn't have to wear glasses. But she kept getting frustrated about how do the lines work on the scoreboard. And I think we mentioned very briefly the other day when we did say that this was free, we mentioned that with this app, the tutorial To say it's terrible is a disservice to terrible things.
Yes, it's horrible. Because
it's virtually non-existent. Mm. And for me, this is definitely an example of an app where if you played the board game, you're going to love it.
Correct.
If you haven't played the board game, what are you doing playing this app firstly?
Now, it must quickly be said for anyone who doesn't know, Suburbia is basically SimCity the board game.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, in my personal opinion, the best pure city building game that there is.
And I'm going to go over the game a bit more, but I just wanted to mention the reason why I came back to this was because I was playing the app. Sarah was playing the app. I haven't played this game for at least probably a couple of years. And firstly, it made me really want to play the game. But secondly, it reminded me what a great game it was and how it does, as someone who has been a big video gamer as well and loves those civilization building games, it really does scratch in a board game form that SimCity itch. Absolutely. Correct. So, hit up Trent, borrowed his copy of Suburbia because I unfortunately didn't have the cash to back that very latest gorgeous collector's edition that had just recently finished being on Kickstarter, where it raised, am I right, $1.8 million. Is that US dollars?
I reckon that's US dollars.
And it's, you know, a lot of money. 12,500 backers. Now, I mean, we talked about it briefly. It was so gorgeous. It's a beautiful copy.
Yeah.
Luckily, a friend of ours, Bo, has backed it, so we're going to see it. But never fear, if you didn't back that, the plain vanilla version is a very tasty version of vanilla because this is Ted Allspach's Suburbia. Now, obviously, Bezier Games, Ted Allspach, it's his company. He's one of the designers. Just off the cuff, though, this was, if it wasn't the first, it was one of the first of our type of games, so these sort of strategy Euro-type games, to win a Mensa Select Award. Now, many, many times. So Mensa is obviously a group of brainy people with their IQs in the top, with our IQs.
Yeah, you failed your membership test.
That's
there, Mark.
Right, yeah. In the top, like 5%, or it's very high.
I'm not allowed to talk about it on air.
Okay. So Suburbia won a Mensa Select Award, can't remember what year.
Well, it was released in 2012, which is actually the same year that City of Horror was also released.
Yeah,
so we managed
there you
to
go.
Have a little bit of continuity.
But it, as we said, it was one of the first of our type of games to be recognised by the Mensa Select Committee. Now, part of this is, yeah, as you can imagine with Mensa, they're into their sort of puzzly games, a lot of abstract stuff and not a lot of sort of stuff that had a share of the market.
Yeah.
So congratulations, firstly, to Ted Allspach and to Bezier Games because they actively targeted that group because part of that, how that Mensa Select Award is given is you've got to make a certain number of copies of the game available for their big convention so enough people can play
Mensa
it so they can
con.
Vote on it. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. In Nerdsville.
That's right. So he's done that well and Castles of Madkin Ludwig also got a Mensa Select Award.
Yeah,
so
they've had a couple
them.
Of winners, yeah.
So, and, I mean, they were one of the ones that said, hey, you know, board games can do this as well. It doesn't just have to be puzzly type games. Anyway, Suburbia, SimCity, you are building a suburb, a town, a city, whatever you want to call it, with beautiful hexagonal shaped tiles. And you've got a number of different tiles you've sort of got. Living areas, which are your green tiles. You've got commercial areas where you've got your blue commercial areas, which is sort of like your offices, your shops, retail.
Yeah,
those
restaurants,
sort of things.
All of those kinds of things.
And then you've got your yellow, I guess, which are also commercial, but more your heavy industry.
Their industry, yeah.
So you've sort of got, you've got your airports, you've got your factories, you've got your landfill, other things like that. A lot of them are places you don't really want to live next to. And then you've got your black tiles, which are a lot of your, I'm not sure what the actual title is, but they are, I'm looking in the rule book here.
I think it's just points of interest or something.
Yeah,
isn't
well,
it?
You know, they are your, I guess, community building. So your schools, your libraries, your council chambers, those sort of buildings. So it's not so bad to be living near them because they provide services.
And often they will, points multipliers.
Yeah, often
really,
they will give you income or they will give you money. And that's the thing you're trying to do in this game. It's a lovely puzzle of you have an income track, you have an income track and you have a reputation track. So you're trying to get reputation, which reputation turns into population. Because, of course, if your town has a good reputation, people want to live there. If your town is earning lots of income, you can then spend that money to improve your town.
Which you really want to do.
Of course. So you're juggling those two tracks, and then you have your victory points, which is population. But there's a nice little puzzle between how, you know, if your reputation is on positive 5, it means you'll be adding 5 population every turn apart from other population that you'll order. If your income track is on positive 5, you will get $5 every turn regardless of how much you're spending adding tiles to your city. And there's this lovely little market mechanic where each turn you will choose a tile. The first two will be... there won't be any extra costs apart from the costs on the tile. The ones above that, I think there's about another 5 more. You'll actually have to pay extra to get access to those to add to your city. And all the tiles will have some form of special scoring on them where they might score, they might raise your income track based on adjacent tiles. They might raise your reputation based on adjacent or non-adjacent tiles. They might cost you extra money. They might give you extra money. There's a lovely little thing where you can build a lake. It's very cheap to build a lake. In fact, it costs you nothing. And everyone loves to live near a lake.
Well,
so
water views,
of course, you will get money for every tile you have that's adjacent to the lake. And then there are these lovely little tricky things. So, for example, a waterfront realty tile doubles the value of the money you get from a lake. An airport means you get more reputation, and if there are more airports, you get or lose reputation. I can't remember. If you're a fancy skyscraper, it's really great to be the first one of those. But then for every fancy skyscraper that gets built after that, you actually lose money.
Yeah, it's not as iconic anymore.
If you have a landfill, hey, it's really great because it will help you build more houses later. But no one wants to live next to it, just like no one wants to live next to the heavy factory. So there are positive and negative modifiers, and there's very much a spatial mechanic of how all the tiles are put together.
Look, I do love the fact that everything is hex-based, so it scratches my inner, I need to make this look nice and neat and it all has to make sense,
yeah.
Whereas with castles it's all a bit higgledy-piggledy. But this is the inner puzzle, and you can see why it got that Mensa Select prize,
yes.
Because it is all about... where do I place this tile for it to offer maximum benefit while also offering minimum negative impacts? And you're constantly balancing, well, I'm going to put it there and that's going to give me 2 reputation but going to lose me some population. This is going to do the other thing. So that's where it is that solo puzzle, but in that really competitive, you know, 1-4 player environment.
Yeah, and the great thing is you will have 2 public goals and 1 private goal that will give you bonus points at the end of the game that you're working towards. It might be the most industrial estates or the least industrial estates or the most contiguous lakes, or there's a whole bunch of different goals that you're working towards. And the great thing is if you're tied, no one scores anything.
Oh.
So there's a real challenge there. You've got to keep an eye on what your partner is, or what your opposition is doing, but you're also trying to do the best thing. Probably the only knock on this game is there can be a bit of AP because,
absolutely,
as you said, am I going to put that tile there or there or there? And you need to work out all the ramifications of what is it going to do in each of those particular areas?
But I also think it's the first game is not necessarily going to be a huge amount of fun because you are working out how they all the tiles and how all the tracks work,
yeah,
into each other. So it can be a bit tricky, but like you're saying, definitely play the game physically before you play the game app, because otherwise you'll just get so frustrated.
Yeah, and so brilliantly, we went back and played the game. I think Sarah just beat me. Damn her. And then on the plane to Melbourne when we were going to see Death Cab, we did the pass and play with the phone. I beat her just. But it was great to remind us of what a fantastic game this is. There's an expansion that adds even more tiles. It just is a fantastic game. And it just reminded me of what a great game it is. And I don't think anything has really taken its place.
No. You're right. You can go on to the collector's edition and do a pre-order as well if you are really
interested.
Oh, there
you go.
It's a lot of money, but it is spectacular. We're out of here.
We have talked too much again, Garth. We've got to go. Hopefully, Leon will take some time to come and see us next week. But in the meantime, Bye.
Ooh-yah.
And remember Vorticon.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.